Thank you. Thank you for that very warm welcome. It's great to be here. President Meyer, Speaker Chenault, members of the House and Senate, thank you for allowing me to appear before you, and thanks to all of you for your wonderful service to our great state. It's great to see so many friends. You know, all of us, we go through a lot, but we're a big family, just like we're a big family in the state. Through ups and downs, births, deaths, marriages, even elections, and in sickness and in health, we're together. And on that note, I'm looking for him. It's great to see Representative Benny Nogiak looking as healthy as ever. Where are you, Benny? Oh, no. That was my first applause line. How about a... Well, it's great that he's back, and I do mean that about family. I wanted to start by relaying a little bit of a story. I know some of you have heard it, so bear with me, but I think that in this audience you can really relate to it, because it's the rookie mistake of a freshman legislator. So in the U.S. Senate, the freshmen are required to preside over the Senate. And some consider it a dreary duty. It's actually, if you look in the Constitution, talks about the president pro tem, and he's presiding over the Senate. And I actually really love it. You get to learn a lot about the history. You have parliamentarians up there who are coaching you, because as a freshman, you all know you're pretty clueless. And not you, freshman. Me, freshman. So my first time presiding, I was very nervous, right? You go up there, there's a gavel that's like 200 plus years old. And so the parliamentarians whisper instructions to you so you don't look like you don't know what you're doing. So a senator stood up. I was kind of nervous. Parliamentarian turned, looked back to me and said, "That's the senator from Connecticut." So he stands up, says, "Mr. President, senator from Connecticut." He talks. "Mr. President," another senator stands up, and parliamentarians look, whisper to me, "Senator from Maryland." "Senator from Maryland," he talks. All of a sudden, Senator Murkowski comes onto the Senate floor. She's got a big smile on her face, knows it's my first time, pretty nervous in the chair. She says, "Mr. President," and I say, "Senator from the great state of Alaska." And the parliamentarians all look, they look back at me, two of them wide-eyed, and they say, "Senator Sullivan, what? We don't do that here." And then I said, "Do what?" Literally, back and forth. "We don't use adjectives to describe states." And then I said, "Well, it's true." So, Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, I know that I can say it loudly, without reprimand, in this chamber, it's great to be back in the great state of Alaska. And it's great to be home. So I'd like to start by introducing a few key members of my team, some of who are joining me today. First and foremost, my most trusted confidant, partner, love of my life, incredible mother to our three teenage daughters, my wife, Julie. So Joe Balash, you might know, is my chief of staff. He's not here. He's working hard in D.C. Many of you know Joe. Miss him. Known as the wrestler from North Pole. And this is where he learned to wrestle in politics. This is where he helped you create a better state. And he's working to help me and all of us do that back in Washington. Amanda Coyne, my senior advisor and speechwriter. Some of you may have heard of her. She used to write this little blog that nobody in this town actually paid attention to. Just kidding. But she's doing a great job for me as well. Mike Anderson, my press secretary, counselor, an Anchorage kid who played hoops at UAF. When you see Mike stand up, you'll know that he's also going to be leading as the center for the Sullivan Senate hoops team. Doing a great job for me in Washington. Connie McKenzie is with me as well today. She's running our congressional office here in Juneau. And importantly, Kathleen Raul is my state director. She's here as well. She's working in Anchorage with my deputy chief of staff, Mike Flegel, putting together a great team throughout the state. We have six offices throughout the state. And again, we're ready to serve all of you. So I wanted to just give initially a DC update. Been in the office now for about 3 months. For those of you who have been there to see us, we're still in the bunker, still in the basement. And I have been very honored to already see so many Alaskans coming out to Washington to see us. And I'm also so appreciative to so many important public servants in this important body who took the time, including Governor Walker and First Lady Donna, who honored me and Julie and our family to come all the way to Washington, D.C. for our swearing-in ceremony in January. It was an incredible turnout. Over 200 Alaskans showed up. By far the biggest turnout, biggest party, best salmon, best beer, Alaska Brewing Company, of any senator who was sworn in that day. The fire marshal even tried to shut us down at one point. But it was a huge honor, and I want to thank so many of you for making that such a special occasion for us. I want to start by something that's really important, letting you know, all of you, that my door is always open. We want to hear from you, we already are, your ideas, your concerns, and we want to help. So the first news I'd like to report is that since the Republicans in the majority came back to the Senate, we are getting back to work. We are getting back to what's called regular order. Let me give you one statistic. In January, there were almost three times as many roll call votes on amendments on the Senate floor, 43, than were allowed by Harry Reid in the entire year of 2014, where the Senate only took 14 roll call votes in the entire year. We're getting back to work. And for me personally, my first goal has been accomplished, to fight for committee assignments that I thought would be important, critical to our citizens in Alaska. These are the Commerce Committee, the Environment and Public Works Committee, Senate Armed Services, and Veterans Affairs. These are my top four choices. These committees allow me to get to work on some of Alaska's most critical issues: fisheries, regulatory reform, transportation infrastructure, veterans issues, and national security. And they also complement the committees that Senator Murkowski's on. So I think in terms of where we are in the U.S. Senate, we're set up very well with regard to committee assignments. Let me give you a quick snapshot of some of the committee work that we've been focused on. On the Environment and Public Works Committee and on the Commerce Committee, we are beginning to work on two transportation bills that will be critical to Alaska, the highway bill and the FAA reauthorization bill. It will help us provide basic infrastructure to help bringing low-cost energy throughout the state, particularly in rural Alaska, and will help grow our economy to its true potential. We're also working on other committees that are taking on issues that are important to the state already. So for our fishing community, we've made great progress in finally getting rid of one of the EPA's most ridiculous regulations, the discharge requirement for our fishing vessels. We are very close to actually getting a permanent exemption for good on that regulation that actually requires permits to hose off your fishing boats. Similarly, for our hunting and sportsman's community, we're finally moving forward on a long-stalled, years, bipartisan sportsman bill that would protect and enhance opportunities for hunting, fishing, and recreational shooting throughout the United States in terms of increased access to federal lands and supporting successful conservation programs. So I'm excited to be playing a leading role on some of these issues, But I wanted to talk to you about, as I become more thoroughly engaged in the Senate's committee process, it's given me a much deeper appreciation of what so many of you do here in the Alaska Legislature. And nowhere is that more important than with regard to the budget work that we are starting to do now in the Senate. Just like all of you, in the past 2 months, we have been hard at work on a budget. In fact, this week in the United States Senate, we'll be taking several votes on the budget of the United States. Now, I know what you're thinking. Big deal, right? You guys, every year, come to Juneau and make tough choices on difficult budgets in austere times, particularly this year. And you're right. You do that. But what is different this year is that the Congress is in the trenches with you, making similar tough choices. This has not always been the case in recent years. We're going to work hard and pass a budget this year, something that has rarely happened in the last 7 years in the United States Congress. In previous years, the Senate had basically kicked the can down the road and tough decisions down the road. The most basic function of our federal government, putting a budget together, was ignored. The president's budget continues this trend of not being serious about the dire fiscal problems faced by our country. His $4 trillion budget seeks to raise taxes by almost $2 trillion, doesn't even attempt to balance the budget, and explodes our national debt to almost $26 trillion within the next decade. We simply can't continue to pass this kind of irresponsible debt onto our children and grandchildren. In contrast, the budget that we're putting forward this week in the U.S. Senate seeks to balance the budget within 10 years and focuses on something that we have not done as a country well in the last several years, and that's grow our economy. So we need to get back to traditional levels of American GDP growth, and that's the best way that we're going to have to tackling the very significant fiscal challenges that face the United States. So these budget votes in the U.S. Congress this coming week won't be easy votes. The press will focus on those hurt by budget cuts, just as they are doing that in your budget deliberations. It will sound to some as if we're trying to make choices that don't care about people. Nothing could be further from the truth. As all of you know, what we need to be focused on is responsible government. That means finally getting serious at the national level about a national debt that could bankrupt our kids and grandkids, and getting serious about growing an economy where we then have the resources to take care of our most vulnerable citizens. And that's what we're going to be focusing on this week. In terms of our work in the new Congress, I wanted to mention, make sure you're aware of one important bipartisan accomplishment that means a lot to Alaska. As you know, we proudly boast the highest number of veterans per capita in the country. Alaska Natives, remarkably, boast the highest rates of military service of any ethnic group in the country, a special kind of patriotism, amazing, amazing legacy for our state. But we also suffer through some of the highest suicide rates in the country. So working on the Veterans Affairs Committee, I was honored to co-sponsor and help push through a bill called the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention Act. It was named after a Marine sniper who, after two tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, came back to his country and struggled with depression and despair. Across the nation, 22 veterans a day are lost to suicide. Many are older veterans. We need to address this. And we have addressed this. You know, I have tangled with and will continue to tangle with the Obama administration on a whole host of issues, but we moved this bill through the Congress, and when the White House called me and asked me to come to the president's signing ceremony of this important bill, I gladly said, I will be there to represent the people of Alaska on this important bill that focuses on suicide of our veterans. This is also a personal matter for me, As an officer in the Marine Corps, I've personally witnessed the struggles, tragic at times, that our servicemen and women undergo. The suicide of an outstanding young Marine, an Alaska Marine under my command, still haunts me. You always ask yourself, could I have done more? Now we are going to do more as a country, and that's progress. So how do we have more successes like the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention Act? Many years ago, I asked a successful businessman what the secret to his success was, and his answer was simple. Define a clear goal, and then seek to align the interests of the key stakeholders. Aligning interests. That was great advice. I've kept it in mind ever since. In many ways, I think it's a critical part of the job that I'm going to be doing as your United States Senator. But where I really learned how to put this into practice more than any other place was here in Juneau with all of you. For example, just think about where we were 5 years ago in terms of Cook Inlet and South Central gas supplies. We were talking about importing gas from Canada. We were talking about a dead Cook Inlet basin. We were talking about brownouts in Anchorage. And then we, all of us, worked together. So many here took the leadership role on the Cook Inlet Recovery Act. We worked with producers, old and new. We worked with regulators. We worked with communities. We worked with the private sector, state agencies. We all worked together towards a common goal: more Alaskan gas, more Alaskan jobs. And we are no longer talking about brownouts. We're talking about abundant Cook Inlet gas supplies possibly going to Fairbanks to help them with their high cost of energy. We're talking about the LNG facility in Nikiski open again. We're talking, or in Kenai open again. We're talking about jobs on the Kenai Peninsula that are booming. We did this, all of us, in a short amount of time by aligning interests. And I think that's what the legislature has been doing over the course of the last several years with regard to Alaska LNG. It's not always easy, and there have been many people who are focused on the interests of this state who have been working on this issue for years, for decades. But in my view, one of the reasons we've struggled with this issue for over four decades to commercialize our LNG has been the inability to align our interests. Alaskans, the market, producers, Asian governments, state regulators, federal regulators. I think we've made historic progress on this critically important project, but one of the things that we need to keep doing is focusing on aligning interests of all the key parties. So I commit to you to do everything in my power from Washington, D.C. to help and work with all of you on doing that, particularly with regard to the federal government in terms of expediting the opportunity to move forward on this project. I'll give you a quick example. I had a very productive meeting with Secretary of Energy Moniz recently, and I asked him about the export license and how important it was to expedite it. He assured me that we would be seeing positive approval of the export license on our project soon. So, you know, there's many other ways that we can be aligning interests in Washington, D.C. Certainly one that I've already started is working with both sides of the aisle on critical issues to our country, critical issues to our state. It's something that I do on a regular basis. In fact, Senator Murkowski, Representative Young, and I made a little news the other night. We had a potlatch dinner at the senator's house with the entire Hawaiian delegation, all Democrats. We're working hard to rebuild that important relationship with Hawaii so we can move forward on things together. So I firmly believe that good ideas are not the purview of one side. And I'm certainly ready and have been to work with all senators, all political parties, Republicans, Democrats, independents, socialists. Yes, we have a socialist in the U.S. Senate. To get things done for Alaska and America. But to me, sometimes the issue of aligning interests is not possible. In fact, I think it's one of the biggest challenges I see right now in terms of getting things done for our state and our country. Because on some of the most critical issues facing our state and country, the administration of Barack Obama does not have our interests at heart. This is becoming increasingly clear. We want more access to our federal lands for opportunity. They want to give us less. We want to jumpstart and expedite large-scale economic projects that create good jobs for the middle class. They want to delay them. We want less federal regulatory burdens on our small businesses. They want more. We want a strong, secure Arctic, teeming with opportunity for our citizens and protected by a strong military presence in Alaska. They are looking at removing thousands of our Arctic tough soldiers. Let me provide a bit more context to each of these. On access to federal lands, you all know the story way too well. Whether it's ANWR, whether it's in the interior, whether it's in Southeast, the President's administration seems intent on locking up Alaska and our future. Additionally, one of the things that I've seen with regard to the Obama administration's weapon of choice to stop projects is delay. Alaska, again, has been ground zero for such delays. Bridges, roads, mines that take years simply to permit, not to build. Oil wells that cannot be drilled. A state-of-the-art clean energy plant that sits idle in the heart of Alaska for over a decade, despite the dire need for low-cost energy. And outside Alaska, the Obama administration has been studying the Keystone Pipeline for 6 years, a project that would put tens of thousands of trade union members to work. Enough. We are Americans. We are Alaskans. We know what we're capable of. We built the Empire State Building in 410 days. We built the Pentagon in 16 months. We built the Alcan Highway, 1,700 miles through some of the most rugged terrain in the world in less than a year. But now we are red taping and delaying ourselves out of an economy. Even the Obama administration's own Small Business Administration admits that regulatory costs are reaching nearly $2 trillion a year. That's roughly $15,000 per American family, more than some families even make. And once again, Alaska is ground zero. Let me give you an example. The EPA is trying to redefine the, quote, waters of the U.S. under the Clean Water Act through a rule that greatly expands jurisdiction in Alaska. This new expansion would mean that the federal government will have even more control over Alaska's lands. And yet, where we actually want more support from the federal government, we might be getting less. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger had the following to say at a recent Senate Armed Services Committee hearing. Quote, "The United States has not faced a more diverse and complex array of crises since the end of the Second World War." Alaska is on the front line of this complex set of crises, especially with regard to Russia's militarization of the Arctic. Just last week, Russia began a 5-day Arctic war exercise that included 38,000 troops, 110 aircraft, and more than 50 surface ships and submarines. This is in addition to building 13 new airfields in the Arctic, 4 new combat brigades in the Arctic under a new Combat Arctic Command, and adding several new icebreakers to their already robust fleet. Meantime, the Secretary of the Army is contemplating removing thousands of soldiers from America's only Arctic location, our state. Vladimir Putin is certainly smiling in Moscow right now. Let me be clear. I'm not suggesting that we maintain our troop presence so that we use it. On the contrary, you put military forces in forward places like Alaska so you don't have to use them. So where does this leave us? What do we do when our interests do not align with the federal administration in charge in Washington. I'd like to make a few suggestions on that point. First, we need to engage in the debates and win the arguments. This isn't always easy with the national media that continues to favor the president and his policies. But we've been working hard, you've been working hard in Washington to convince the Congress and Americans that we have good ideas that can translate to real progress for them. I applaud all the legislators who have been coming to Washington, testifying in front of hearings on some of these critical issues. We've been doing it in hearings and in op-eds and in speeches. I had a recent hearing with the Secretary of Transportation in front of the Commerce Committee, and I asked him, do you think it helps the United States when it takes 8 years to permit a bridge for our infrastructure? And in almost every Armed Services hearing that we have had, I emphasize the importance of energy in Alaska for our national security, emphasize the importance of the Arctic. And today we had an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that ran that mentions what you are doing in Alaska on these important issues to let the country know how important these issues are. And of course, there's the EPA, whose leadership is finally now getting tough questions asked about its unconstitutional policies and how they're opposed by the vast majority of Alaskans and the vast majority of Americans. Second, with good arguments, we need to increase the number of allies on our side who support good legislation and work to stop bad policies. This is also starting to happen. Let's take Keystone. We were only 3 senators short of overriding the president's veto. 25% of the Democratic caucus in the U.S. Senate voted to override the president's veto. Similarly, we're now close to getting a 67 veto-proof bipartisan majority to thwart the president's goal of bypassing Congress on his nuclear deal with Iran. And it's not just Republicans as we start to win these debates. Last week before the Congress, Harvard Law professor Lawrence Tribe, who was President Obama's former law school mentor and is considered a liberal icon, a great constitutional law professor, but certainly not someone that Republicans have relied on before, he went before the Congress and argued that the EPA's new rules were a power grab. Professor Tribe said the following before the Congress just last week, quote, the EPA is attempting an unconstitutional trifecta, usurping the prerogatives of the states, the Congress, and the federal courts all at once. Burning the Constitution should not become part of our national energy policy. By the way, just for the record, that was not Dan Sullivan. I was quoting Lawrence Tribe, Professor Tribe, on that issue. Bottom line, I think we can win these arguments, and it's very important to engage in the debate. Third, we need to continue to defend the Constitution and the rule of law. As Professor Tribe's testimony points out, so many of the Obama administration's policies ignore the Constitution, and Americans of all persuasions are seeing how problematic that is for the country. The rule of law, carefully built up and nurtured for centuries in this country, is a gift. Most countries don't have it. We have it. We need to protect it. And I have hope, because there is a growing number of members of Congress who see the Constitution not as a mere suggestion, but as the foundation for our government and the foundation of the protection of our individual liberties. And finally, we need to continue to work together, all of us, to create alignment on these critical issues for Alaska and the country. I know that you all are doing your part here. You're passing resolutions against the administration's ANWR policies, and that's very important. Keep it up. We are noticing. People are noticing. I mentioned that again in the Wall Street Journal today. It's also heartening to see that we had hundreds of Alaskans, led by many of you, come out to Anchorage, come out to Fairbanks to support the continuing presence of our military in those communities. It is making a difference. We need to do the same on the EPA's overreach. In April, I'll be chairing field hearings across the state on the proposed Waters of the U.S. rule. We need to hear Alaskan voices, loud voices, on this issue to start reversing this flawed policy. So let me close by saying a few things. First, I miss Alaska like crazy. I even miss testifying in front of some of your committees. On some days. Secondly, as a legislator myself, I've gained enormous respect for what all of you are doing here. And finally, I believe it's important to remember that the structure of the Constitution puts states in the lead on so many issues. As your Attorney General, I understood, believed in, and continue to believe in, and am committed to the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. Former Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis put it well when he called states as the laboratories of democracy. It may not seem like it sometimes, but in D.C., we follow you. We should be following you. You are teaching all of us what it means to guard and protect democracy and move this country forward. Thank you for listening to me today. It's great to see so many of my friends in the audience, and I look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Sullivan. Senator Sullivan has agreed to take a few questions, so let me start with Senator McGuire.
Welcome home, Dan. It's wonderful to see you and Julie here. Thank you for all your work. Many people don't know this about you, that you helped write the United States' first Arctic policy when you were an assistant Secretary of State. Good policy, a good start. We now have the Obama administration that has put in a strategic plan that I fear is going to leave Alaskans behind, our national security interests, our economic interests, and I want to know, how will you help lead our country and turn those policies around to the benefit of Alaskans?
Well, thanks, Liesl, and thank you. Thank you for what you guys are doing. Bob Herron, I mean, there's so many. It's always dangerous to start naming names because you're going to leave people out. But We had a number of Alaskans in testifying on the Arctic recently. It was a great hearing, and you mentioned the initial Arctic policy. That was a national security policy directive at the end of the Bush administration. That was I worked on it. Mead Treadwell worked on it when he was the chairman of the Arctic Research Commission. We had a lot of Alaskans working on that, which was important. Senator Murkowski. And I think one of the things that concerns me and the role that you guys play is going to be so important is that we don't have many Alaskans driving the policy that in many ways I think is driven by John Kerry. And you look at the priorities that are laid out with regard to the Arctic policy of this administration. I don't think it's the priorities that align with Alaska. And I say that not as a Republican. I say that as an Alaskan. I think that the Democrats and Republicans in this body would not be emphasizing some of the things that they're emphasizing. Let me give you an example. Zoning of our oceans. Okay, I think that's opposed by the vast majority of Alaskans. It's a huge amount of money. They have no congressional authorization to do it. And it looks as an opportunity for them to lock up areas for our fishing community and make it more difficult to responsibly develop certain parts of the state. So we need your help on this because you guys have the most credible voices of anybody. And Senator McGuire, you saw in that hearing, there's members of the Senate who want to even undercut your credibility. And Alaskan voices, I thought the way some of you were treated in terms of witnesses was disrespectful and didn't appreciate it because you had senators talking from a complete lack of knowledge. And yet you guys came in, told the story, and it was very powerful. The one other thing that I'm raising quite a lot about, and that's why I wanted to mention it in the speech today, was this issue of the militarization of the Arctic. It's an issue that is happening, and it should be a concern not to just Alaskans, it should be a concern to Americans. And I think you're starting to see it. I'll give you one example. I asked you about the Arctic in almost every Senate Armed Services hearing that I'm on. I think literally to the point where some of my colleagues, Republicans and Democrats, look, start rolling their eyes, oh, there he goes again on the Arctic. But I think it's important. And we had a hearing with the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Armed Services, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he knew when I asked about the Arctic. He was the one, I had not heard this before. The Russians are increasing their military by 6 combat brigades. 4 are new Arctic brigades. We have a map that we can get to the legislature that shows what they're doing. It is something that I think as Alaskans we should be concerned about, not you know, panicked, but it does go to this broader issue that I think we're all united on, which is we should not be looking at removing troops in Alaska when Vladimir Putin is clearly building up the Arctic. And that's an issue that I think we're starting to get bipartisan interest in. We're also starting a bipartisan interest in the need for an icebreaker. Look what the Russians have in terms of their fleet. Look what they have. Look what they're trying to do. And we're really, I think we're number 4 or 5 in the world in terms of our fleet, and it's not looking good. So we're going to keep working on that. But again, I can't emphasize enough how much credibility all of you bring when you come to Washington, when you testify, when you meet with other members of Congress on this issue. What I've been trying to say, it's not just an Alaskan issue. It's a national issue for the United States. And when we make that case, we can get a lot of progress done on the policies.
Senator, Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Sullivan, I love to say that. But seriously, as an Alaskan, I want to first thank you for standing up to the EPA and fighting for Alaska. Can you explain the most recent amendment that you put forward and what kind of reaction you got from it?
This relates to the EPA?
It certainly does.
Okay. Yeah, I will. Thank you, Representative Gaddis. Look, this was an issue. It was a campaign promise that I made in Fairbanks. And it was an amendment that we're still working on. I think we're going to, again, get bipartisan support. A simple amendment, which was to disarm the EPA. The EPA is... And, you know, what was interesting on this is you guys all know the story, what happened in Chicken, Alaska, and, you know, body armor, rifles, shotguns, helicopter overhead. The EPA has not always had armed agents. As a matter of fact, it didn't have it for the first 20 years of its existence. I think the guy who really pushed to get them armed was a young congressman back then by the name of Al Gore. I'm not kidding. I mean, we look deeply into this. But what was interesting to me is just on an issue of this, you know, where we think we need to roll back the role of the federal government. Look, where are there areas? And so I put forward this amendment, and there was a huge reaction. We got a letter, or I didn't get it, the leaders of the Senate, both Republican and Democrat, got a letter from the Law Enforcement Association of the federal government. It had a list of every federal agency that was actually armed. Did you know your Department of Education has a SWAT team? I didn't know that. So, but there became a huge outcry to say, there was a senator, one of the lead senators on the other side of the aisle went to the floor immediately and said, this is the most ridiculous amendment he's ever seen in his career. My reaction is incredibly ridiculous that you're trying to limit the overreach of the federal government on something pretty simple, and you have senators who are going to the floor denouncing it. So to me, this is not some kind of gimmick. I think this would provide more oversight. Of course, the EPA could still do law enforcement, but if they had to do something, they would go to a trooper. They would go to a marshal and say, they would go to local law enforcement, say, come help me execute this warrant, if they needed that. And that would be an additional check on them, as opposed to going to small mining operations with body armor, looking for Clean Water Act violations that didn't exist. That's the kind of thing we need, in my view, to start looking at in terms of rolling back the responsibilities of the federal government. We do not need them to have a role in every aspect of our lives. And so we're going to get that done. I think we're going to see some bipartisan support on that issue. And I'm glad you asked about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. President. Welcome home, Senator Sullivan.
Thank you, Julie. Senator Bishop. Great
I got
to see
you. You've talked about a topic that we all care about a lot here and pay attention to, and that's the EPA. You've mentioned it several times. My question is about their new definition of what constitutes water under the Clean Water Act.
Right.
And along those lines, I don't need to ask the rest of the question, but the last part of this question is, can you comment on the proposed rulemaking by the EPA and by the process which the public can comment? Because we were researching it, and it's quite extensive for the average small miner to wade through the rulemaking comment section. So if you could elaborate, please.
Sure. Well, Senator Bishop, thanks for your leadership on this. Again, this is one of these issues, working with all of you, that I got more knowledge and information and background because of leaders like Click Bishop, who have been raising this with me. And so we're taking action. As I mentioned, I'm the subcommittee chair of the subcommittee on waters, wildlife, and fisheries on the Environment and Public Works Committee. So we're going to have field hearings in Anchorage, in Fairbanks, in April on this issue. And we want Alaskans to come out and let us know how they think about this rule. Now, just so you know, this is something, I talk about it in this op-ed today, that the process in Washington right now, I think in many ways, is broken. What happened in this case was the EPA in 2009 wanted to increase their regulatory authority over waters of the United States. They sought to do it through legislation. That's great. That's what they should do. No problem. But that didn't go anywhere. Nobody, including in 2009 when the Democrats controlled both the House and the Senate, that did not go anywhere. So what happens in the interim? The president, not to be deterred, not getting the work done that he needs to get things through Congress, decides to issue a rule on it anyways, essentially trying to do the same thing. The Alaska RDC has estimated that that rule would increase the EPA's oversight of our waters in this state by 40%. 40%. Now, that is clearly the function of the Congress, whether or not to do that. Not an agency that's supposed to implement the policies of the Congress. So, again, what's useful on this, there are many Senate Democrats right now who are opposed to this rule as much as we are. There's farmers there throughout the country. So we've had hearings already with the EPA administrator, and they are going full bore. As a matter of fact, they expedited this rule. And we need to stop it. We need to stop it. And that, I mean, all of us, Democrats and Republicans, because this would not be good for the state of Alaska. So I'm working back in Washington to make sure that this rule does not see the light of day. But we're going to need all of your help, all of your support. And it does go to this broader issue of the rule of law. When the EPA is saying that they have the power that the Congress has, that's a violation of the separation of powers, and it's not good for the United States. So we're going to battle that, but we'll continue to work with you, Senator Bishop, and so many others on how to do that. And again, this is a theme of mine. You can see it's your leadership on these things that are so important to us in Washington. So I really appreciate your leadership on this, and we're going to continue to work with you and others.
Thanks, Senator. Representative Grunberg.
Senator, welcome
back.
Good
to see you, Max.
Glad to see you, definitely. One of the issues that's really important to our state is the Law of the Sea Treaty.
Yeah.
And there have been problems getting it through.
Yeah.
People from both sides of the aisle have attempted to do that. what's the story on that and your position?
So my position was, because it has an increase in taxes with regard to the UN placing taxes on American entities, I was opposed to it. And that's continuing to be my position. I've not seen that moving right now in the Congress, in the Senate. The administration has not been, you know, that would be something that they would have to push for and try to get through the Senate. And I have not seen any indications that they're looking to do that. But, you know, if we do, we certainly will be interested in your views and others.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. President. Welcome, Senator Sullivan.
To see you.
Good to see you. When you talked about EPA now being able to arm themselves and so on and so forth, one of the concerns that I have, and I think this is a big government overreach, is our Transportation Security Agency.
Yeah.
And it used to be a time where, and I think it still is, that they're not law enforcement. They're not even supposed to be officers. And now we see them from going from a black and white uniform to a blue uniform with metal badges. Before it was just patches. And now they refer to one another as officers. So I just hope the next step isn't that they become enforcement, that they continue to be security.
Yeah.
And actually, I would like to see some of their authority even drawn back a little bit. I think there's nothing more than security theater. I don't know if Americans are really feeling safe. And I'm very concerned about Americans always being suspicious of one another.
Yeah.
And so it's just this conditioning that's happening on America and in general that I think is too much of an overreach, as well as, you know, you look at the transportation infrastructure that we have, it's slowed our economy down quite a bit just based on that alone. So I ask that you watch that very closely. And then my second request is really to focus on opening Anwar. And I say that because I know the Keystone Pipeline will bring a lot of trade union jobs to America, but that's bringing Canadian oil down to markets, and we want to make sure that we have a pipeline, we have a big piece of infrastructure. We don't want another piece of infrastructure to compete against getting Alaska's oil to market. So if you will, please focus on that as well. Thank
Good.
You, Mr.
Thank you. And I look forward to working with you on the TSA issues. If you guys have suggestions on those, please let us know. And look, we're very, very, very focused on Anwar. As a matter of fact, like I said, the op-ed that I ran in the Wall Street Journal today was directly focused on what the president did. How, again, I think it's one of these things. Look what he did. He said he's going to put forward a bill to have the 1002 area, the coastal area, wilderness. Okay, again, it's not in dispute that that is a role for the Congress. Under ANILCA, under the Wilderness Act, it's our role. So the president does a head fake to the Constitution and the separation of powers. He said he's going to put forward a bill on that issue. He hasn't yet. But then in the meantime, similar to the waters of the U.S., he says that he's going to, quote, manage the 1002 area for wilderness anyways. Well, what does that mean? He doesn't have the power to do that. So we are very, very focused on not only that, but looking at ways, again, trying to work with the members of both sides of the aisle on doing exactly what you said, opening Anwar, or looking at ways to tweaking ANILCA to make it clear that the state of Alaska's lawsuit against the federal government right now, that we are pushing, that Governor Parnell and now Governor Walker have been pushing, that exploration plan that we put forward, that ANILCA allows that right now under current federal law. So we have a whole host of areas that we're looking at with regard to opening Anwar. And again, though, I can't emphasize this enough. If you have ideas on this and your work already is so critical, please, please get them to our office, because this is one area. You know, my last point in my remarks was about all of us working together. This is the one that we have to be working together on. So I would welcome any thoughts and ideas you have.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Stoltz.
Welcome, Senator Sullivan. Why don't you give us your freshman perspective of talking about bipartisanship and actually practicing bipartisanship? And you've used two sports metaphors, I'll do one. Kind of reminds me of a basketball team. The guy always promises to pass, i.e. legislation is the metaphor, but it always seems to go to the hoop for executive orders. So any comments on that?
Well, first, Senator Stoltz, I'd like to commend you for the tie you're wearing this morning. and thank you for this tie. Look, I think it's an issue, again, that is a broader, it's a broader problem that I don't think is a Republican or Democrat problem. It's the issue of an executive that when it can't get what it wants done through the correct constitutional process of putting forward bills and trying to convince the Congress that this is good for the country, then just saying, forget about it, I'm going to do it myself through executive action. And, you know, we're seeing this, whether it's on illegal amnesty issues, whether it's on the waters of the U.S., whether it's on Anwar, whether it's on the order in 2011 that locked up half of NPRA. That was an executive order that took the National Petroleum Reserve of Alaska, set aside by the Congress of the United States for oil and gas drilling. Half of it was taken off the table through an executive order. That's not how the system is supposed to work. And what I mentioned in this article in the Wall Street Journal today is that the biggest surprise I've seen in my first 3 months in the Senate is that, in my view, these shouldn't really be Republican and Democrat issues. These are more kind of separation of powers issues. And I mentioned kind of the giants of the Senate in the past. And of course, I mentioned Ted Stevens. And I mentioned others, Democrats, Robert Byrd, Warren Magnuson, Daniel Inouye. And I say that if a president was doing this when they were in the Senate, regardless of party, regardless of even if it was one of their own party, you would not be seeing these former senators rolling over and say, go ahead, Mr. President, take my power. And I think that's the big change. That, to me, that's been the big surprise. So what we're trying to do is get a bipartisan coalition, and we're starting to see it. Like I said, on Keystone, we almost had it. 64 senators voted for that override. On the Iran nuclear deal, I think we're likely going to get 67 senators, Republicans and Democrats, saying, Mr. President, if you cut a deal with the largest terrorist regime in the world, according to the Constitution, you need to bring that deal to the Congress for our approval. The American people, through their representatives, need to approve that. And I think you're going to see that kind of bipartisanship on that issue, because it goes to what you're talking about, Senator Stoltz, which is separation of powers that is a disturbing trend.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. We'll take one more question. You've been very generous with your time.
Oh, no, my pleasure.
We do want to get you out of here by noon. So, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. President. Welcome, Senator Sullivan.
Thanks, home. Les.
It's a question I've asked our prior members of, Senator Murkowski and former Senator Begich. It has to do with Citizens United. Citizens United reversed prior law, allows unlimited corporate contributions into elections, unlimited group spending into elections, and most Americans oppose it. They think it's put too much money in our elections process. Two questions on that, things you could do and whether you're interested. One is, there's going to be another Supreme Court nominee at some point. And would you use a litmus test whether or not they would support Citizens United as a reason to reject them, to turn back the law to what it was? And then, short of the Supreme Court, Congress has tried to pass for the last 6 years something they called the Disclose Act. I don't care what version of it is. Senator Murkowski actually supports doing something like this. It would require that if Citizens United remains the law, that you at least list in these independent expenditures that corporations and groups are spending on, you list the biggest donors, the top three donors, the top five donors. So would you support that? And there's been a six-year filibuster on that, and we'd like to see that change, or some of us would. So A, on the Supreme Court justice, would you use that as a litmus test not to approve a justice who supports continuing Citizens United? And B, would you support legislation to reveal who the biggest of these large donors are in these independent expenditures?
So on the second question, you know, I'm interested in taking a look at all legislation, but until I see something and the exact details on it, I wouldn't commit one way or the other. You know, on Citizens United, I was somebody who I certainly believe in a very, very strong protections for the First Amendment. And you know, one of the things that I was opposed to that I know was moving through the Congress last year was actually the reaction to Citizens United was actually to amend the First Amendment. Literally, there was a number of senators who were looking at amending the First Amendment in reaction to Citizens United. I'm opposed to that. I think that I trust James Madison's judgment a lot more than I trust Harry Reid's, who was rewriting that. And but I'm a strong believer in free speech. So on the litmus test issue, you know, I'm whether or not a Supreme Court justice comes, I'm very unlikely to put a litmus test on anything. What I'm very focused on is a Supreme Court justice, and I think this is the critical issue for a Supreme Court justice, that believes in the fundamental aspects of reading the Constitution and limited government. And that's where I would be focused on with regard to any Supreme Court justice that comes up in the next 6 years, on whether or not they have a textualist approach, a limited approach to looking at the Constitution and the rule of law, not a justice that believes in a living Constitution in which the nine Supreme Court justices somehow become a super legislature for the United States. That's not the way the Constitution was set up. That's not the role I believe that our justices should be playing in the country.
Okay, with that, Senator Sullivan, I think we appreciate your time and addressing the body.
Great. Thank you, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker. Thanks again. And I just want to leave, again, the emphasis. My door, our door in Washington is always open for all of you. And we look forward to working with you on getting big things done for the state and the country. Thanks again.
Senator Dan Sullivan addressing the Alaska Legislature in Juneau. You've been tuned into special live coverage of the annual address from KTOO and 360 North. I'm Scott Burton.